The following is intended for bizarre audiences only. Welcome to the Midnight Library.
Modern times, in a place seemingly everywhere. Throngs of curious people visit the Midnight Library to hear strange and magical tales read to them by their enchanting host, Miranda Merrick. The ancient library has stood on the edge of the village for as long as anyone can remember. The guests being entertained in the library generally return home safely with fond memories of their weird evenings there, but many guests have gone missing. They simply disappeared. And in spite of the village officials trying to investigate the missing people, and some of the officials themselves disappearing, well, after that, the trail went cold. Hello everyone, I'm Robin Warder from the Trail Went Cold podcast, and you're visiting the Midnight Library. Good luck with that.
Madam, I understand there's to be a reporter from the Village Voice in attendance tonight. Will this be permitted?
I'll allow it. Until I won't, darling. Let's see how they behave.
I expect they'll try to find out about you, or myself, or our associates. Everything here in the library, or Phantom Forest.
There's so much to choose from, isn't there?
Aren't you the slightest bit worried, madam?
Nope, not as long as there's you, and myself, our associates, and everything here in the library and Phantom Forest.
Oh, right.
How wonderful to see you all. Oh, you look so lovely. Yes, please go straight ahead. Directly into the reading room, please. All of you. Oh, my stars, there are so many of you tonight.
Sir,
no. Just go straight ahead with the group along into the reading room, please. Yes, I know how enchanting and tempting the rest of the library is, but we don't allow our guests to wander the house. No, even if it is referred to as a library, it's our library and our home, so... I'm sorry? No, you may not speak to me alone. Oh, you must be the reporter. No, you can ask me anything you like as our beloved guests. File into the reading room. Good evening, Miss Price. Did you ever find your other eye? We'll keep looking. Oh, no pun intended, Miss Price. Oh, dear. Yes, sir. Your question? Yes? Is it true that I caused a priest to combust? Well, which one? I mean, no. Oh, my stars, that's all I have time for. Please take your favorite seats, everyone. We're all friends here in the library, no matter what you may have heard in the village. Welcome to the Midnight Library, my dear guests. Let me say that I understand that many of you have come a great distance to visit with us. And we appreciate you, and we are grateful for your kind efforts. I'm sorry you can't stay as overnight guests, but we can suggest other accommodations where your comfort and safety is more likely. I am your harmless host, Miranda Merrick. Everyone assumes that because of the sheer size of the library and because we do have several opulent guest rooms, that we're somehow some manner of sleepaway camp or a bed and breakfast establishment for the general public. But alas, we are only prepared or equipped to lodge associates of ours and our many staff members and their family-type members. And well, please don't be offended. We wouldn't show up and ask to stay at your house. Not that there's anything wrong with your house. It's just that there's so many of us. We are legion. Oh, two additional small things to address before we begin tonight's reading. The hospitality tray is already set up with some fun mock-type fatal foods that have been lovingly prepared by our Natasha, who has carefully removed the toxins from the pufferfish cookies and pulled all of the dangerous cyanide-filled seeds from the fruit, which was picked fresh in Phantom Forest. So don't be reluctant or hesitate in any way to try some of these delightful goodies. I'm sure none of you have ever offended our Natasha, right? Let's see. Oh, the second thing. I want to immediately squelch the rampant rumors that the feral kittens here have been slipping into coat pockets, hoods of jackets and backpacks and purses, and jumping into automobiles and bike bags to catch a ride into town with some of you, our guests. That's not true and is largely unfounded. And yes, I am fully aware that the village is having a terrible problem with several roaming bands of wicked little wild kittens rumored to be crossbred with our precious felines. But we've caught almost all of ours, and we've buttered nearly all of their paws to get them to stay at home here in the library with us. So I know that they're not related to the in-town kitties, who are apparently rapidly biting and draining the blood from random townspeople and hurling themselves through shop windows to get to the raw meat selections. How unfortunate. Poor little kitties. Adopt, don't shop, you know. Oh, and unfortunate is how I would describe the endings of all the folks in our fabulous and fascinating reading fair for this evening. I just happened to be looking through the village's old church records and reminiscing. That's right, I have the records. And I was reading about the absolute myriad of weird ways that people used to die. I mean, the variety was astonishing. Well, they do say the variety is the spice of life, don't they? Or the spice of death in this case. You know, Natasha has a little bottle marked the spice of death in the lower kitchen. It's a prop or a joke, for sure. I'm sure. Anyway, I was reading about all of the bizarre ways that people used to just pop off and die. I mean, just they passed away. And it made me long for the good old days. In a different, totally more acceptable kind of way, of course. And so I was compelled to gather some of the more interesting and unusual ways that human people used to part spirit from flesh. and present them to you as nicely as possible, most certainly. Now, before anyone here asks, I haven't returned the heavy tomes and collective volume of church records yet, as some of them need to be proofread, blotted out, and corrected. But here, just to whet your appetite, let me present a short, incredible list to you from the years 1658 to 1663. These engrossing expirations were handwritten by the old church elders in just one of the many record books I now have. Let's see. One gent drowned in a pond by following the will of the wisp. I see a few of you nodding knowingly about the dangers of this irresistible activity, which we recommend, if done carefully, of course. You have to keep your wits about you, if you can. Let's see. One gent fell and broke his neck whilst robbing a hen's roost. To be totally transparent with you, as we always are, that just happened last month here on the grounds. Stefan, Mr. Strangeways, built a beautiful high hen house for our unique jet black Howden chickens. And some brute climbed up to rob the rare eggs and was pecked in the face by our broody hen, Hilda. They go directly for the eyes, you know. And, well, it was so nice to see a revival of this sadly scarce way to die. One person was said to have perished by becoming crossed in love. Now, I would take that to mean cheated, but we all know how deadly love can be, so let's all be mindful of that risk. One chap, curiously, it says here, he overheated himself while at a housewarming. So perhaps if you're seated what may be considered to be dangerously close to one of our fearsome fireplaces, that you might want to reevaluate your proximity. Two people reportedly died of the cold while sleeping inside the church. I'm surprised they included that one. Be aware, my lovelies, that churches often give off fake warmth, but you'll always be cozy and cared for here in the library. Two people perished from drinking Mrs. Lamplow's cordial water, probably because they didn't know the secret to imbibing it safely. Four people were frightened to death by fairies. Ah, the dark fae indubitably are a perchance pitfall, and if you choose to mix with them, you do so at your peril. Three townspeople ceased to live when they were drowned for witchcraft. Well, I'll just check to see if those who drowned them may have any living descendants whom I might pay a visit to, just to chat. And I'll most assuredly visit the graves of the persecutors. You know, history buff that I am. Now, this seemed odd. Seven people were hanged for clipping and coining, which I mistakenly thought was an off-color carnal activity, but later discovered it was actually some form of dodgy smelting process for making counterfeit coins. Some of you may have in your possession one or two of the old counterfeit coins my great-uncle Azazel makes. I mean made. I believe they are hexagonal in shape with six sides and are worth 66 cents. They have a silly goat on one side and some gibberish he made up on the other side and are some kind of copper alloy, and they tend to hold their heat. They're still legal tender down at the Broom and Fang, by the way. Oh, and seven human people died because they were bewitched. So what? Tonight's reading in the Midnight Library is kindly brought to you by Grimm's Grocers. Grimm's featured product this evening, Mrs. Lamplow's Cordial Water. Mrs. Lamplow's Cordial Water, made by Lizzie and her daughter, ever since 1665. And yes, the two are still alive. Mouth so dry your tongue is dust, Lamplow's cures your water lust. Splash and cool your dried up kisser, with a slight risk of death from blisters. Lamplow's restores your vim and vigor. Just drink it right so you won't rigor. Moonlight, rat bones, and intrepidation delay intestinal liquidation. Lamplow's cordial quenching drink. A sip could have you at death's brink. It's the spellbinding making you'll find that makes you crave this witchy brine. Scooped up from a spring that's hidden, a bubbling froth, cursed and forbidden. Bottled by these battled witches, strained right through their tangy britches. Grimm's challenges you to try Mrs. Lamplow's cordial water, now on sale for $6.99, for a quart cinched up in the bladder of a swine. Side effects will include choking, blisters, blood sweats, exploding teeth, tongue, escape, and a fate guaranteed to be equal to or worse than death. Nearly complete hex prevention instructions available for an exorbitant fee. You'll love Mrs. Lamplow's cordial water, sold only at Grimm's Grocers on the corner of Vincent and Price. Oh, the Lamplows, such lovely women. Now, to be a bit more in-depth with our fascinating list of old-fashioned ways that people used to give up their precious ghosts, I've selected a most vivid happening that was all the rage in the name of fad and fashion as it burst onto the scene in the 1800s. This stealthy death deliverer, when I first speak its name to you, my lovelies, may sound to you like the name of an alluring person, and that person would be one seductive assassin. Paris Green. Doesn't that name sound charming? Who wouldn't love to meet Miss Paris Green? Only, it's not a person at all. It is a color. A vibrant blue-green peacock-like pigment, the likes of which had never been seen before during these late times. It was so beautiful, and it lured and enticed and hypnotized the Victorian culture. Likely a remixing of a color used as far back as Roman times, Paris green arrived in polite society in the 19th century and was available for use in artists' palettes to get that true pop of spring green leaves and dreamy bucolic pastures. It could also be purchased by the gallon and sold as household paint to make your parlor, your dining room, or your drawing room come to life and dazzle the eyes of your visitors. The alluring color was then blended into textiles, carpets, luxury wallpapers, and rich fabrics, bringing a fresh, lush vibrancy to everything it touched. And then death to everything it touched. Because Paris green was made from arsenic, one of the most toxic and deadly substances around. That's why our sugar bowls on the hospitality tray are clearly marked with labels that read, "Sugar, not arsenic, sugar." So there's rarely a mix-up. So, this enchanting new color became so trendy and so in demand, it was everywhere. But before it was used as a coloring additive to drastically beautify, it was used in its raw powder form as a deliberate poison. It was used to kill rats in sewers and as a dusting pesticide to kill insects on crops. In the midst of the Industrial Revolution, with the cities all dirty with soot and grime, people were desperate to brighten up their homes and themselves. When the eye-catching colorant was added to paints and textiles, the makers obviously assumed that no one would be chewing on it or ingesting it. It was a color. And aside from looking at it, how would a person take in a color? Well, no one realized that Paris green, or copper acetoarsenite, outgassed or vaporized on a molecular level and could be breathed in. So, if you had painted your child's toy box or high chair with it, or if your napkins or furniture was draped in or upholstered in the brilliant blue-green fabric, or your fancy new gowns were permeated with it, snugly touching your body, Paris green would leak directly into your skin. And if you had papered your walls with wallpaper that was saturated with it, the invisible drifting air of your newly decorated room contained an invisible cloud of fine particulate poison for everyone to breathe in. Some of the first unfortunate victims were the women and children who worked, yes, tiny children, who worked constructing cloth and paper flower petals treated with the deadly substance into showy blossoms and bouquets of attractive fake flower arrangements for others to display in their dreary homes or to wear on their hats and lapels. Real flowers were nearly impossible to get unless you were extremely wealthy. Early reports of the danger of the possibly toxic dust were fiercely rejected. One heir to a copper mining company that mined for copper ore, of which arsenic dust is a convenient byproduct, was warned by doctors that the miners were suffering from arsenic poisoning. The heir, who was also a famous designer and artist, verbally attacked the physicians, declaring that they were bitten by witch fever, which was an old-fashioned way of saying that the doctors were quacks. Actual witch fever is something else entirely. More on that another time. So, little by little, the poison got in, causing first coughs, blisters, and open sores, then headaches, vomiting, diarrhea, then lung and heart failure, then death. The higher the concentration of the poison, the quicker the death. Arsenic itself is colorless and odorless, Many Victorians were well aware that this made it a perfect, stealthy, intentional poison. But once the substance was literally camouflaged within the Eden-like color of Paris green, anyone could become an unintentional target. You know, there's a reason colors are assigned hex codes, Spooky Lovelies. And Paris Green's hex code, should your curiosity get the better of you, because it is true that the exotic color remains to this day impossible to duplicate exactly. The hex code is Octothorpe, hashtag 50C878. And no matter what disastrous, unspeakable fate you might meet with, dear guest, always remember, the League of Lady Gravediggers are here to collect what's left of you. Please never worry about your remains, the bits left over of your flesh and your brains. The League of Lady Gravediggers always deliver a freshly dug hole for your bones and your liver. If you have met with frightful Aunt Fran, and whatever is left of you fits in a can, the ladies will see that you get into the ground. They'll rinse out that can and you'll never be found. If you're chomped on by ghouls hiding under the stairs, or the wolves eat your guts, leaving only your hair, there'll be a nice spot for the ladies to dig. Even if what's left of you is only a wig. Even if you die neatly from horrific hysteria. And then you're dismembered in the cordoned off area. Those grave digging girls are Johnny on the spot. They'll grab each mangled limb and each bloody clot. Don't be without a plan, dear guests. Trust the League of Lady Gravediggers to rustle up whatever remains of your remains. Afterlife cleanup is now made easy when you stay at the League of Lady Gravediggers Dead and Breakfast. And you sign on the dotted line. Your future corpse is as good as gold. Your carcass will be collected and buried and not left to mold. Book your room and future grave now at 976 Ditch Witches. Well, I would very much like to go into still more details about certain unique, old-fashioned finishings for foregone folks, but in combing through the vintage records, I was compelled to prepare for you a strangely interesting list of sorts. It's quite extensive, but I have pared it down to the particular names of the things or ways that our good townspeople used to die of that I'm nearly certain you've never heard of before. Many of these, thankfully, are easily treated today. Mostly. It seems quite a few people used to die from something simply listed here as cut of the stone. Not cutting stone, but cut of the stone, which I've since read meant that their surgery to remove a kidney or bladder stones had failed drastically. Dropsy is common here in the margins, and it's still about, although few die of it today. Dropsy was untreated swelling of the body's tissues. Some in more rural areas are listed as simply dying of wolf, which we won't make too much of that. Here we have something unusual. Some died of surfet, not smurfet, surfet, S-U-R-F-E-T, Oh my, this was death by overeating. Jaundice may sound familiar, as this is described as a person who had turned yellow or become jaundiced because their liver had failed. Those listed as jawfallen or jawfallen had actually died of lockjaw or tetanus infection, usually from a minor injury such as stepping on a nail. This entry leaves little to the imagination, as it is rather spot on, with just a hint of judgment about it. Indiscreet use of laudanum. Laudanum, some of you may know, was used as a kind of household cure-all in Victorian times, rather like aspirin is today. It was that common. It cured headaches and coughs, aches and pains, depression, teething pains in babies and children. It treated nervous conditions and insomnia. Anyone could simply buy as much as they wanted of it. It was the preferred tipple and sad undoing of many famous writers, artists, and poets. And common people. It appeared to be, for many years, a huge problem solver. The problem was the laudanum concoction, or solution combined with alcohol, was primarily composed of obscene amounts of opium, a highly addictive, dangerous, and deadly drug. Mr. Reporter, no, we do not have any here in the library. Oh, how rude. We have our Natasha's cooking, which has similar helpful qualities. The more demure listing for those who passed away of the French pox had actually died of syphilis. I thought dying from rising of the lights sounded absolutely dreamy, until I read that it meant that you had coughed yourself to death from some lung illness. What a shame. Next, many singular people off on their own apparently died from a common but undefined condition, simply listed as affrighted or being affrightened. They were often found alone, stone cold dead, their faces frozen in horror, without any clue as to what had left them in such an awful state. Sometimes these poor folks were discovered by loved ones at the very moment they staggered from attic rooms or stumbled out of the forest's edge, drenched in a cold sweat with their mouths stuck wide open and their eyes wild with fear, their hair on end, clutching their chests, unable to speak or breathe, riggered in terror by whatever they had met with. And then they just died. They fell to the ground, dead. That's happened here more than once. When my Aunt Fran walks the corridors, we revived the victims, the visitors, with, Mrs. Lamplow's cordial water. we know just how to do that. And,
Where?
Which corridors? Mr. Reporter,
where?
I know that's not your name. I know. No, don't bother telling me. Irma Puppet, why don't you show Mr. Reporter, to the noted corridor and the alternative way out of the library there as a treat for you. I mean him. There we go. Good girl. Everyone else, well, I thank you so much for coming out to see us this fine evening. We certainly enjoyed having you as our wonderful guests. Please, you all follow Dashing Mr. Darling safely out to the veranda. Not Irma. just Mr. Darling. There we go. Good night, my dear guests. Good night.
Well, madam, shall we enjoy our tea as I tell you what's become of Mr. Reporter?
I take it he's fully disposed of, and I'm not about to drag the hem of my gown through any leftover bits, right?
As nice as that sounds, no, there's nothing left. First, he met Aunt Fran. Then Irma doused him in Mrs. Lamplough's cauldron water. Then the feral kittens dragged him to their hidey hole.
Oh, something for everyone. Oh, I love happy endings, don't you, darling?
Yes, madam, especially when they're happy for us.
And everyone and everything in the Midnight Library would like to thank Robin Warder from the Trail Went Cold podcast. Robin has been doing his show on missing and murdered victims for several years now, and it is excellent. But you probably already knew that. Thank you, Robin, for providing us with such a fabulous opener.
Hello everyone, this is Robin Warder, host of the true crime podcast, The Trail Went Cold. If you grew up watching the classic television show Unsolved Mysteries, then this is the podcast for you. Each week, I profile a new unsolved murder or missing persons case and share all the baffling details. Afterward, I provide my own personal analysis and theories about what might have happened. This is a show for true crime buffs who are fascinated by cold cases and love to discuss them and pick them apart in an attempt to figure out the truth. So be sure to check out our podcast to learn about some truly bizarre unsolved mysteries where the trail went cold.
The Midnight Library would like to thank everyone at Astonishing Legends. Our excellent sound design is by Chris at Sounds Like an Earful. If you are enjoying your evenings in the reading room, we invite you to join your dark companions and help keep the Midnight Library open and the beasties fed. Please visit patreon.com/midnightlibrary. Where you can contact me directly. Seek us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Our bizarre merch can be found at redbubble.com/people/midnightlibrary.